The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. It's an all Yale day on the Eric Metaxas Show. Naomi Wolf, class of 84, Eric Metaxas, class of 84, John Zmirak, class of 87, I think. Kind of funny that some of us escaped the intellectual ideological gulag that that was Yale, if I can put it charmingly. Naomi, what Fauci said or what he didn't say, it's a scary thing when you can sit in the Senate and talk to a senator, and the senator not only is a medical doctor who has the facts, but he's even trying to get you to say, maybe I made a mistake, it's more complicated, and just stonewall. Where do you think this goes?
I mean, it's very ugly. Right here on my phone, I have publications from Vanity Fair to the National Academy of Sciences to the MIT Technology Review, detailing millions of dollars of funding from the NIH to what is called by the conveners gain of function research. You know, there was a 2015 seminar that NIH and NIAID officials attended that Dr. Ralph Barrick presented at called gain of function research, where they were basically saying, and this was after the pause, where they were basically saying the optics of this are bad, the language is bad, we're going to get in trouble, it's too hot over here, let's call it something else. I mean, I'm summarizing. And, you know, after that, the funding went to Wuhan to do very similar research. So it's like, it's not hidden. I mean, you can read it.
I guess my question is, what is the problem? Why would it make sense for Fauci to just say, yeah, here's what happened? Well, I mean, what are they fearing?
Well, it's a huge problem. I mean, first of all, he's committed perjury if he lied to the Senate.
Isn't that the whole point? Is that he lied, so now he has to cover the lie? I mean, wouldn't it make it's like Watergate. If you just tell the truth, forget about the cover up. Maybe they'll forgive you.
He lied to the Senate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's jail time and a fine. You know, that's a felony, as I recall. And rightly so. You know, we can't have people lying to the Senate. So I think he's probably getting legal advice that he's not following. I think clearly, having worked, you know, with a presidential staff and a vice president, he's clearly not in the loop, or there are clearly two camps now, and he's not being given the right talking points. He's not being coordinated with the CDC. They're kind of letting him hang himself in a way, and that is not a threat. Google, Microsoft, YouTube, figure of speech. I thought of it literally.
I just want to be clear in my mind.
Well, I'll leave that alone. But I think that apart from needing to, so he needs to cover up his initial lie and say, and play with words and say, well, my staff said it's not gain of function research, or, you know, it's not defined in Omaha as gain of function research.
But wait a minute. Why do you think, because you said that they're hanging him out to dry, or they're letting him hang himself. Why do you think who is the they, and why do you suppose they would do that? I'm not clear if you have an idea on that.
Well, this is intuitive reading the tea leaves as a former political consultant, but there are various big powers that are not all aligned in this situation. There's the White House that has seen what he's hiding, of course, because they have lawyers and they have researchers and they have staff, and they're probably going, holy S, you know, this is terrible. He did fund gain of research. There's so much documentation of it, and he may well have funded the research that has led to this pandemic. That is a possibility, but he certainly continued funding research that Americans, if they knew about it, would be horrified. Barrick was making making pathogens more infectious in UNC, and they were using bat colonies in Maryland, right? I mean, this was right here on our shores. You know, we're almost lucky that, you know, we didn't have an outbreak here because of the research that was being done right here in the United States before they farmed it out to, you know, a country where they have much laxer, you know, limitations on things. So it looks like the White House and the CDC are realizing what a liability he is and realizing that politically, the Republicans are going to win the midterms and the next presidential election if their message is freedom. If their message is, I'm going to take the masks off your children. I'm not going to ever lock you down again. I don't have the right. As Kristi Noem, whom I heard yesterday here in South Dakota at Freedom Fest, said, I don't have the right to take away people's inalienable rights, their constitutional rights. That's a winning message. And Fauci's saying the opposite. And then there's whoever's behind Fauci at a meta level. And it looks like some nefarious combination of Bill Gates and the Davos crowd and, you know, China. And their constellation is not about what's best for the American people. Their constellation, you know, is about getting as many untested experimental vaccines in the arms of Americans as possible, masking children, making them obedient, crushing the United States.
So I'm assuming you haven't read C.S. Lewis's book, That Hideous Strength. But the level of creepiness that we're seeing here, I have no problem saying it strikes me as end times demonic. It's really, demonic. Really creepy. And I just want to say that, honestly, today, I think it was this morning, I went on Google Maps and they'll have this thing where you could click a button and it's like the traffic map or the satellite map. There's number of options. One of the options was there's like maybe four or five options. One of them is COVID. I thought, why has this strange thing made its way like a pathogen into the culture so that everywhere I go, there's signage about this? I cannot look at a map without getting reminded about COVID. I don't know why it's on there, but the reason I'm bringing this up, Naomi, we've just got a couple minutes here, but it strikes me as looking nefarious, as though actors at Davos and in these kinds of places have put something in place, and that now we're talking about variants, and we're talking. It really does seem like everybody's worst nightmare from a year ago. Like here we are, and it's tracking. Mm-hmm. It's tracking.
Right. I mean, I know the answer to why you see it everywhere, but you know, I'll have to come back another time to give you the details. It's the COVID-19 Response Project, which is launched in spring of last year. It's all the major tech companies, and they all had double-digit billion profits. They're not going to let this thing go, you know, driving us all indoors, driving us onto Zoom, driving our kids onto digital education. And, you know, when I mentioned the unholy alliance with the Davos crowd and China, not everybody wants America to thrive. Some people really plan for us not to be a superpower, and we're inconvenient. Freedom is inconvenient. So you're seeing all these signs everywhere, A, because it mints money for tech companies and pharma, but also B, because for other interests, American freedom and the Constitution is incredibly annoying and inconvenient and threatens their profits and their plans for the future. And that's why they need to break our kids. That's why there's this focus on turning our children into little robots.
This is heavy stuff. We do have to get you back on here because I really there's so much more to talk about, and you're so knowledgeable in all of these things. We've got less than a minute. What are you doing in the next month or so? Are you able to travel? Is this nonstop speechifying about these important things? What's going on with your life?
Thank you for asking. Well, you know, I'm like you. I mean, we should talk because I literally pray continually, you know, as they say, and I never used to, because I do think these forces are so demonic. I mean, they're not like on this plane anymore. It's clear, and I'm not trying to be like metaphysical unnecessarily.
Logic has led you to that. Logic. You look at everything and you think what it sure seems like it has to be something bigger.
Well, there could be, and you know, you mentioned C.S. Lewis, there could be a really beautiful conclusion. Like, if there are demonic powers, it must mean there are angelic powers.
Well, that's a fact.
And if there are these negative forces creating this dystopia, you know, both on the material level and a spiritual level, it must mean that we have more ability than we think.
Boy, do I want to keep talking to you. Now we're out of time. I know you have to go, but I just want to tell you, that is what led me to faith. I read a book, People of the Lie, by M. Scott Peck. He wrote Road Less Traveled. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the demonic clearly, I thought, well, if a Harvard psychiatrist believes in evil, maybe I can believe in good. So we've sort of ended on a positive note. Naomi, we're so grateful for you. To be continued.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey, folks, are you concerned about memory loss for you or a loved one? VivaLore's founder prayed that God would show her the solution to memory loss because her mother had dementia. After many divine encounters combining faith and her background as a pharmacist, Susan Gibson created VivaLore Memory Support. VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. It won awards and has 3 books independently written about it. Visit VivaLore.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. VivaLore is for those with normal memory, mild or severe memory loss. Don't wait until your memory slips. The pathology starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. That's VivaLore, VivaLore.com. Check it out. Remember, VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. VivaLore is V-I-V-O-L-O-R at VivaLore.com. Enter promo code 20 for 20% off. VivaLore.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R.com. From the frying pan into the fire, as they say. John Zmirak, my friend, my guest, my interlocutor. Let me ask you a question, John. I want to be more mainstream. And so instead of asking you a bizarre question up front, let me ask the kind of question people ask on some of the more popular interview shows. For example, hey, John, how's your summer been going?
Pretty well, apart from the advent of totalitarianism in my society, which, you know, that gets me down. But on the other hand, the weather has been unseasonably cool here in Dallas.
Really? And I was going to say that you probably spend a lot of time at the beach catching rays, playing hacky sack and stuff with the other young people. But you don't look that tan.
No, I've always viewed the sun as my enemy. In my family, we don't, even though half my family's from the Adriatic, from Croatia, we don't tan, we lobster. So also my childhood experiences at the beach, at Jones Beach in New York, were a person every 2.5 feet, loud tinny radios, people roasting pigs over gasoline flames. I got a very unpleasant association with the beach at age 7 and never went
back
until age 40-something in New Hampshire, where I learned that the beach is half empty and the water is never above 60 degrees.
So the water, that's the problem with the Northeast, is that the water is frigid. I remember I was once in Maine near Vinyl Haven, I guess, way up there. And I jumped in. I only went in the water because we were water skiing from the dock. So you didn't need to get wet if you were able to water ski off the dock. But when the boat stopped, the 5 seconds of swimming back to the dock, I will never forget it. It was like the antithesis of what a lobster must feel like being plunged into boiling water. It was just like my whole system reacted. And I think I got my first gray hair that day. It was horrifying. Okay, John, we have to be more substantive. First of all, you did an interview with me. And I don't mean a video interview. Which, and by the way, you didn't post those. You need to repost those with the interview. But you did a Q&A with me called Fish, on my book Fish Out of Water. And the visual, how did you find the visual for Fish Out of Water? Because what was the title? You titled the whole thing. This is at stream.org, yeah. And I posted it on my social media.
Pan Roasting a Fish Out of Water with Eric Metaxas. And I was thinking of those little celebrity roasts we grew up on with Dean Martin, and where I found my lifetime role model, the great Don Rickles.
Oh, that's you're speaking for both of us, brother.
I used to stand up and put my hand on my heart as if it were the national anthem when Don Rickles came on TV. And my parents, of course, just looked over at their weird little son. So Pan Roasting a Fish Out of Water with Eric Metaxas, and I went on iStockPhoto.com and looked for Greek fish. I was looking for a Greek-style roasted fish.
But the book is titled Fish Out of Water. Now, if people are just tuning in, it's a memoir of my life from age 0 to age 25 when I had my dramatic, miraculous conversion experience. That's the denouement of the book. But Fish Out of Water, it has several meanings. But I never thought of a cooked fish on a plate, a Greek dinner fish with some French fries and some tomato and green salad garnish and olive oil and oregano. I wasn't thinking of that kind of a fish out of water. But thank you for doing the interview with me. Your questions are far more entertaining than my answers, so people need to go to stream.org. It's delightful. Now you really should repost that though with the interviews that we did.
I will do that.
Those were nuts. I mean, I have to tell you, I want to do that with you more often.
Here's what I try to do when I do my Q&As with you about your various books, Eric. I try to give people the feeling from the interview that they will have from the book, that feeling of delight and entertainment and interest and intellectual curiosity and lighthearted sort of skipping through the fields of thought, you know, picking an occasional flower, smacking an occasional bee, getting stung by an occasional murder hornet. And I want people, when they're done the article, when they're done the interview, to go, damn, I got to get that book.
That's very nice that you think that well of the book. You said something in the opening line of the article. That's one of the nicest endorsements blurbs I got. You said something like it was the most, I can't remember
the most delightful book of 2021. This has been a dark year. So.
Well, I know, but you know what? Seriously, because I know how much you read, that is really a wonderful thing. The most delightful book of 2021, John Smirek. That needs to go on the cover of the paperback. The problem is the paperback won't come out till 2022. But I hope people will buy the paperback. I mean, look, I know it's a fun book because it's all true. It's fun stories. But your interview with me, your questions and stuff, people need to. I'll post it again on social media once you post the videos.
I got to pin Eric down on the source of the meat in those carts that smelled up our neighborhood growing up. There were billows of meat smoke coming out of carts run by Greeks. Every 100 feet. I mean, now there's a Starbucks today. There was a Greek meat cart then, like every 100 feet. And I was trying to.
But
pin
don't
you
tell
down
the answer. Don't tell my answer. People have to read the article.
Right.
At stream.org. The title of it is
Pan Roasting a Fish Out of Water with Eric Metaxas.
Pan Roasting a Fish Out of Water with John Smirek. Right.
And my question, and you got to read the article to get the answer, is: was that really pork, or was it just catch of the day? From whatever was running
sure know
around
how
the
to
story.
Hurt, you sure know how to hurt a friend. Okay,
and
so.
And then you came right back at me about the Irish.
I attacked back. I had to, for my people, okay? Now, John, You, and by the way, I'm only stealing my father's line that he used at the dinner table with my mother. When things got heated, you know, he would say, your people, meaning the Germanic tribes, were wearing skins and living in caves or whatever when we were producing, you know, the greatest art in the history of that. You know what? Fair point. Okay, now, but we have to get more serious. You have an article out more recently about something I was actually involved in. I was at Charlie Kirk's Turning Point USA event down in Florida, Tampa. And I was only there roughly for a day. But the day that I arrived, there was a big contretemps, brouhaha, to do about a porn actress. Now, can you call a porn actress a porn act? Like they say porn star, porn actress. What are they? Really, they're not. They're certainly not actresses, and they're hardly stars. Except
they're video prostitutes. They're video prostitutes.
Well, you know what? You can take two sides of these things. In a sense, you could either be angry at the horror of it, or you can be sad at the horror of it. It's heartbreaking. This woman is pushing 50, and she's making some kind of a living, and she puts herself out there as a conservative businesswoman. Can you even imagine what the world has come to? But she was asked to leave this Turning Point USA event. And people like Ben Dominic at the Federalist had a problem with that. I talked to Michael Knowles about this. We're going to air that on Monday. But your article is spectacular. What do you say on the whole issue?
Well, thanks. The title is – it's over at stream.org. The title is Anorexia, Porn, and Ben Dominic. Now, Ben Dominic said, basically, don't be a bunch of prudes. We need to be a big tent movement in the conservative movement. My point was, let's leave divine revelation out of this. Let's even leave natural law out of this, okay? Let's just think about the public good. If you're running a political movement, presumably you're trying to do something good for the public. If you're going to admit that you're trying to harm the public, you're going to face some PR challenges.
Okay, now the point being that it doesn't have to be like some religious objection that we're being prudes. Right. We are simply speaking as citizens of the United States. Go ahead.
What would be good for the country, yeah. Well, our birth rate is falling. And if it weren't for mass immigration of unskilled laborers sneaking in from neighboring countries, our population would actually be shrinking. To me, the birth rate, not the GDP, the birth rate, ought to be the metric on whether a country is doing well or not. Do the people in the country think it's worth passing on the gift of life? Is it too difficult or unpleasant or depressing for the species even to reproduce itself?
Now, by the way, you didn't reference George Weigel's book, The Cube in the Cathedral, but about 15 years ago, he wrote a whole book in part talking exactly about what you just said.
Okay, good. So let's forget the GDP. I don't care what the GDP is. I care what the birth rate is. That's the kind of thing a real conservative movement, a real right wing,
correct,
would be focused on. We don't care if Jeff Bezos can gold plate the toilets on his rocket into space, which sadly will probably land him back safely. We don't care about that. We care whether families can reproduce themselves.
Okay, hold on. So that's the bullet point, folks. Hang on to that bullet point. We'll be right back with John Zmirek. Hey there, folks. I'm talking to John Zmirek. John, we're talking about a lot of important stuff. You just made this beautiful statement. The way you can view a culture is, do the people mainly want to have kids? Do they feel hopeful about the future?
That's the vote count that we should be looking at. It's impossible to falsify. What is the birth rate? Is it falling or rising? Is the population at least replacing itself? On average, is every couple having two kids or a little more? And the answer is no. Our birth rate is falling. It's not as bad as Japan's. In Japan, the human race has just curled up in a ball and decided not to even have sex. Our rate of teenage pregnancy is falling because teenagers are not even bothering to fornicate. Now, normally the great challenge of every society is to keep the teenagers off each other long enough for them to become adults and get married and have kids. Our kids are not even copulating. The boys are all just sunk in the porn world.
Groping is out.
Groping other people is out. This auto-groping seems to be the trend. Pornography is killing interaction between the sexes. Think about it. Dealing with another human being's needs and whining and questions and personality, it's a real pain. Dealing with the opposite sex is a real pain because, in a way, it seems like men and women are like natural enemies doomed to mate. Imagine cobras and mongooses had to mate in order to produce more of the same. There are the differences between the sexes, exacerbated by the fall of man, make mating a challenge. Well, our society has said, well, we'll just offer homosexuality. We'll try to destroy both the biological sexes. We'll offer to produce 46 new sexes in case you need any of them, in case you want to try something different. If you want to identify as a trans lesbian pony, that's okay, and the government will accommodate that and punish anyone who doesn't recognize your new fantasy status. So all of that together, pornography is to sex what bulimia is to eating. Let me repeat that. Pornography is, it's not like gluttony. It's like anorexia. You're looking at pictures. You're not doing the natural thing that your body wants to do. You're not doing the thing that nourishes your body or the human species. You're doing some other fantasy weird thing that produces and generates nothing. So what in my article at stream.org I said, imagine this were a culinary convention and a pro-anorexia cultist showed up. And there are pro-anorexia cults on the internet. They're referred to by Anna, A-N-A. And it's very sad. They're forums where girls with anorexia who don't want to change, who've decided they're going to stay with anorexia, where they trade pictures of their emaciated bodies and they reaffirm how good their decision is to be anorexic. It's similar to the transgender movement, except it hasn't got political power. Imagine an anorexia cultist showed up looking like a Holocaust survivor in a bikini, showing off her ribs and her emaciated body at a culinary conference. And she's promoting Don't Eat. Would the chefs there welcome her? Would the people selling, you know, coated pans and egg blends? No, they would not welcome her because she is against the thing that their movement relies on, people eating. Conservatives should not welcome porn activists because pornography attacks the thing that matters most to us, the family, the reproduction of the human species, parenting, the loving union of man and woman, ordained by God, reflected in nature. So leave natural law, leave sin out of it. Pornography is the enemy of the human species. I have an analogy in the article where I said an absolute libertarian would say we should be able to buy and sell strategic nuclear weapons. We should have that freedom. Free contract. I'm selling. He's buying. Why should Big Brother get in the way?
Yeah,
the
freedom, man. Freedom. More nukes.
Right. Exactly. The problem is the freedom wouldn't last. Once the nuclear war happens,
you're just being a prude. John Zmierich, I'm calling you out. You're a prude. I want nukes. Why should you, with your religious objections to mass death, have anything to do with me fulfilling myself by buying some nukes, dude? Come on.
And the problem is that after the nuclear war, the bacteria and cockroaches that survived in the rubble would vote in socialism. So if you want freedom, and I want freedom, you want freedom that lasts
right.
More than a few minutes.
Right.
Okay. Buying and selling nuclear weapons is not a legitimate human right that any libertarian should support because it goes against the survival of the human race. Porn is the same. Porn is against the survival of the human race. It is replacing sexual interaction among a whole generation of people. It is going, the birth rate is already falling in America. It's plummeting in places like Japan. What's big in Japan? Porn. Bizarre online animated porn. People aren't even dating anymore in Japan. So we oppose porn because it tends to wipe out the human race.
Well, I mean, that's one thing, John. That's one thing. Porn also degrades women and degrades men. Let's be honest. I'm a father of a daughter. I'm the husband of a wife. I'm the son of a mother. If you love the women in your life and you have respect for women as God's creatures made in his image, pornography is a nightmare. It is a demonic version, parody of God's idea of what these wonderful women are. Let's be honest. We're talking to John Zmierak, folks. Why would you go away? I know you won't. We'll be right back. Talking to John Zmierak, and you get to listen. Okay, John, this is hard because this article that you wrote about what Ben Dominich said, it tempts me and you and many of us to want to, you know, kind of make fun of him and his point of view, or make fun of this sad woman, this porn actress. But there's another side. I want to appeal to Ben Dominich. I've been on his podcast at the Federalist. I mean, he's a wonderful thinker, and we agree on most things. But on this issue, I just want to appeal to him to take what you said in your article at Stream more seriously, and what Michael Knowles said in my interview with him, which will air Monday, more seriously. I actually think it's really important that we define what does it mean to be a big tent party, and it does mean something. We don't want to lose because we're purer than the other. But what you're talking about is really important, and I think we have to have this conversation in the culture. There's a divide now where libertarians seem to think that they're conservative, but they're really more Democrat or liberal than they are conservative. And you see it in issues like this. The idea that wanting to keep a porn actress who's making money off of pornography and gaming the system by saying she loves America, so she should come to the TPS. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's filled with young people. It's a student action summit. So the idea that Ben would feel that he needs to say that that's prudish, I guess I want him to take that seriously and really think about this honestly. Don't just take be a knee jerk, you know, they're prudes and I'm not. But I also want to say in love to this poor woman, I mean, this is not the plan God has for you. I don't know her name. I don't remember her name. But I think we just have to be real and say to these people, like, you know, once we say you can't come to the thing, then forget about it and just say, this is not God's plan for you. He's got a better plan for you. This is heartbreaking. As a father and a husband and a son, it just breaks my heart. And I want us, particularly as Christians, but just as human beings, to say that. This is not about condemning somebody for moral choices. This is about our hearts breaking over someone condemning themselves through their moral choices. So that's my sermon, and we can move on.
Yeah, I guess what I want to say to libertarians is you have this exalted idea of human beings and their individual rights. Why would you want to foster movements that degrade human beings and present them as a subhuman, that show only their animal side, cut off from the rest of their cells? In my column at stream.org, I quote a 1971 column by the great Irvin Kristol, where he goes into in great depth the case for censoring pornography. And he said that pornography reduces human beings to only their animal sexual side. Now, I have a metaphor. I thought I would. I left this out of the column, but when movies, you know, the way movies used to show people kissing and then they would cut away because you knew what happened next. Now they go all the way through, so you have to see Michael Douglas's wrinkled behind because, you know, you have to know.
Yeah, they get the camera. They get the camera up until you can actually see the fallopian tubes. Who wants to see that?
Right.
I don't want to see that.
So I want to. I want that to happen. No, I want to be consistent. I want every dinner scene in a movie to end with the people on the toilet. And I want every detail of the toilet activity down to the toilet paper. I want all of that on film because we're not afraid of reality.
And you know what? That's brave filmmaking. Follow them.
That's right.
Into the bathroom. Don't be afraid of them, but don't be ashamed of your body. Let's see what happens after the food is digested. Be brave. Open your eyes, people.
And if you don't want that on film, you are a prude and you're anti-food. You're anti-food. You're an anorexic. You're the anorexic because you don't want the poop video. You don't want to see,
okay,
you know,
once somebody says poop video, we're going to have to move on. And unfortunately, you just used those two words. You know, John, it's funny, though, because you and I, we've lived in this reality, you know, ever since we were in college and before. We hear these really just insulting cliches in the media, right? Like, how many times have you heard a woman say, "I'm not ashamed of my body"? Who said you're ashamed of your body? I would think that if you're proud of your body, that's why you don't want the world to leer at it. But you hear this kind of, "I'm not ashamed of my body. I'm not ashamed of the human body." Whoever said that? These, you know, these straw men are set up, and then we have to hear these cliches decade after decade.
But then we find out that Harvey Weinstein was blackmailing them to do nude scenes that they didn't really want to do. I mean, on all those Miramax films, those artsy movies with nudity we saw that were presented in the 90s, we now find out Harvey Weinstein was basically, you know, berating and threatening the women to do nudity they were profoundly uncomfortable with, which traumatized them, which they still cry about sometimes. Salma Hayek. He pushed Salma Hayek to do a nude scene in the movie about Frida Kahlo by threatening to cancel the whole movie if she wouldn't do it because he wanted to see her naked doing a lesbian scene. That's what's really behind these
things.
Well,
what you just said is true.
Very few actresses are enthused about doing nude scenes. Read their interviews. They don't like it. It's uncomfortable. And you know why? Because it's not natural to be naked in front of dozens of strangers. That's not how we're built. We don't reproduce in mass ceremonies. It's not like remember the Sun Myung Moon mass marriage at Madison Square Garden back
all
in the 70s?
All too well.
50,000 people getting married at Madison Square Garden. That felt weird and creepy because it wasn't natural. Public fornication isn't natural. That's why the only people who do it are those who are too stoned or drunk or desperate.
Well, that's correct. You know, Frida Kahlo, the idea of that, I mean, every time I see pictures of her with her mustache, I just don't understand what the fascination is with Frida Kahlo, except maybe the fact that she had a mustache. We are talking about important things, John Zmirak, and I want to remind my viewers and listeners, I'm not kidding, we need your help. We need you to spread these ideas. We post them on Rumble. We ask you to sign up to my newsletter so you'll get all this delivered to your inbox and you can share it with your friends. I really mean it. We're living in a time. People say, "What can I do?" That's what you can do. We do some really substantive interviews. We need you to help share them. Since we got kicked off YouTube, our views have dramatically plummeted. So we need your help. If you care about freedom and America and all that good stuff and the future, we ask you to help us. We also ask you, of course, to go to Nutramedics.com and to MyPillow.com and use the code ERIC. We're grateful for you folks for helping us, but we do need your help. John Zmirak, we'll be right back with you. Folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, I want to stick on this, if you don't mind. What happened at Turning Point USA with this pornographic actress and the leaders there saying, "No, you can't be here." You know, she wasn't some anonymous person. She was there as this pornographic actress entrepreneur, quote unquote, right?
Handing out business cards where you could, with her Twitter handle, where she posts pornography.
Yeah, and she's probably getting a ton of publicity off of us even talking about her. But I'm just here to say, folks, that, you know, she's her own pimp. So she makes it seem like I'm an empowered, free woman doing it's the whole thing's heartbreaking. But forget about her for a second. We have to have this conversation with conservatives like Ben Domenech. We have to help him to understand that we're not being prudes here. This is a human issue, and it's an issue. If you love women and care about them, you really need to take this seriously. You must.
It's the opposite of prudery. The prudes are the pornographers. The pornographers are the ones stopping people from dating, from having sex, from getting married, having kids. They are providing a styrofoam substitute for food. Imagine people were handing out styrofoam bagels that had some sort of drug in them and then it made you feel really good. And they were giving it to teenagers instead of their lunch. And the teenagers weren't getting nourishment and they were gagging on the styrofoam but they didn't want regular food because they found they liked the styrofoam better. These are the people who are prudes, who are opposed to ordinary human sexuality and the reproduction of the species. They're the ones running around stopping it. So I think we need to keep that anorexia analogy in mind. That is the right analogy. It's people looking at pictures of food on the internet instead of eating. Pornography is the enemy of sex and therefore the enemy of the human species. It's a replacement. It's like artificial fillers, again, eating styrofoam. And if people start to prefer styrofoam to regular food, you're going to have a health crisis. And look at the birth rate in countries like Japan, the birth rate in countries like America. So when people as smart as Ben Domenech don't get this, I think it's a spiritual problem. I think that the demons are loose among us. And in my column, I actually have a little thing, LGBTQ, LMNOP, my name is Legion. And because I want to say that I think the porn and the LGBT movement are literally demonic. Trace them back to their origin. Who was the first thinker in the West to argue for legal abortion? Do you know who he was? Who was the first thinker in the West since the ancient world? No, the Marquis de Sade. No. The Marquis de Sade was the first thinker.
Now, nobody knows his real story. It is so horrifying. Ladies and gentlemen, trust me. It is so horrifying. I wouldn't even read about him because it is so evil. We're talking about men raping their young children.
Right.
Murdering their I mean, it's a level of demonic stuff. It's so ugly, you shouldn't even look at it. But when we talk about people like Marquis de Sade and this kind of sexuality, that's what we're talking about, ultimately.
The Marquis
comes de Sade, from those kind of people.
The Marquis de Sade was a rich aristocrat who liked to kidnap and torture prostitutes, helpless women off the streets. Went to prison for it. Bizarrely, French intellectuals have glorified him and taken his nauseating, repetitive, depressing, pornographic books, which are all about kidnapping and murdering. No safe, sane, consensual.
Think
nothing.
About this, folks.
These are like journals of serial killers. The Marquis de Sade would have been a serial killer. Boy, but again, let me come back to the point. He was the first thinker to argue that abortion be legal. Who did he influence? He was a major influence on Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir. They explicitly cite him as an influence, and the origin of the feminism that Simone de Beauvoir promoted was the Marquis de Sade.
Thank you, John Zmierak. Folks, thanks for listening.